It's the Lisa Wexler Show. Phone lines are open. Call 203-661-5051.
Good afternoon. You are listening to the Lisa Wexler Show today. I'm Beth O'Malley, your guest host, this Friday, March 17th. And happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. I am here this afternoon with Miss Rebecca Camizio from Stanwich School. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hello, Beth. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you here today. We have a really fun lineup today, and I just kind of want to review that a little bit for the folks first. I am on the air for Be Well with Beth on Mondays, and what I'm going to do is an extended version of my show, but this time we'll have three guests, and Rebecca has a podcast of her own, so she is going to stay with us through all of the guests and share in talking back and forth about a few different topics. We're going to start off with you talking about executive functioning and attention ADHD, attention deficit disorder with hyperactivity, and we'll talk about the difference between ADD and ADHD, and then we're going to talk about make a transition into how there can be for some folks in the teen years some using of substances to self-medicate and so forth, and we're going to discuss that a bit more. We'll then bring on Dr. Harris Stratner. He is a psychologist and internationally recognized expert on addiction, and he is the regional clinical director of the Care and Treatment Center in New York City, and also affiliated as the clinical associate professor of psychiatry at Mount Sinai School of Medicine. After that, we'll have Carrie Wilkins on, and Dr. Carrie Wilkins is the co-founder and clinical director for the Center of Motivation and Change in New York City, as well as the Center CMC of the Berkshires, which is a private inpatient residential program. She's also an author of Beyond Addiction, and today she's going to come and wrap up the show in terms of looking at parenting and what parents can do to help their children. And in fact, she's recently published on a book for parents on helping children with substance abuse. So I think it's a really fun lineup.
Sounds great.
What I'd like to do is start with a little bit about your background. And just so folks know, you are right here locally in Greenwich at Stanwich School.
That's right.
And as a nationally certified school psychologist, you really specialize in the social emotional learning. We're going to talk today about this new buzzword, which I think for the last couple of years we're hearing more and more. And it's really quite the buzzword with both educators and also clinicians.
Definitely is.
And that's executive functioning. And there are things that parents can really do to support a child who have executive functioning developmental delays or concerns, as well as things that folks can do with kids who are diagnosed with ADHD. And so we'll be discussing that today. Now, you've actually collaborated on a book about executive functioning, games, and activities.
That's right. Yes, it's called 70 Play Activities, along with my good friend and mentor, Dr. Lynn Kenny. And it's kind of like a recipe book for different activities to help educators, parents, other school psychologists or school counselors find playful ways to help children develop metacognition, which is an executive functioning executive function. And so I think I'm hoping that it's useful to people out there, because it is such a hot topic in school. And often when things go wrong in school for kids, teachers can notice those weaknesses, and teachers will say to parents, you know, your child is having trouble just planning and organizing their homework, or, you know, getting to school on time, or regulating their emotions. All those things are executive functions.
What I really appreciate about your book as a clinician is it's a book that I can refer parents to, and it truly encourages not just that organization, but also encourages self-awareness and helps with issues around self-esteem.
That's
and
right.
Who am I, you know, especially in the middle school years. That's one of the hardest struggles for our children today.
It really is. And I think, too, sometimes when kids are not where their peers are in terms of executive functioning, even in the early years in preschool or kindergarten, we first see executive functioning weaknesses in those young ages as difficulty with regulation. You know, I see a toy, and rather than sit on the rug with the rest of my class, I just go up and get it. Or right. I forget to raise my hand, and I blurt out. And kids often come home with a lot of shame because they understand that that's not the right thing, not the thing they wanted to do, but they're having difficulty controlling that impulse. And so I think it's really important to take the shame out of the picture, because we're all developing and we learn skills at different times. And to be positive about developing the skills and growing from where you are is really important for kids and parents.
One of the pieces that I'm so anxious to talk to you about today is your training from Columbia University in terms of your master's degree and the certification in school psychology has really shaped the information you have to offer to families. And there's so much confusion between executive functioning and ADHD and making that diagnosis and children self-diagnosing, parents diagnosing their own children, which obviously is, you know, not the greatest thing and not necessarily on target with being able to differentiate between the two. So let's start with executive functions. What are the executive functions?
I think that's a good place to start. I think there is a lot of confusion around what are executive functioning skills, and how do we know if they're weak or strong, or if they're developmentally appropriate. And so if you look at different experts, they categorize them slightly different ways, but they're basically consist, maybe you could think of them as contained within three buckets. And one of those buckets is working memory. The other bucket is self-regulation or inhibition. And the last bucket is cognitive or mental flexibility. But then when you dig deeper into those buckets, we try to create sort of individual skill categories. And Peg Dawson and her collaborator Guare, Dawson and Guare, have wonderful books that I recommend for parents and educators called Smart But Scattered. There's a version for children. There's a version for teenagers. And in their conceptualization of these, they have listed several separate executive functioning skills, which include response inhibition, the ability to control an impulse, to inhibit an impulse or an idea, cognitive flexibility, to be able to handle, I thought that was going to happen, but this is going to happen, or I'm doing this right now, but now I have to stop and do something else, setting and achieving goals. That's really difficult because it's such a process. There's so many steps involved with creating a goal and working towards it. Task initiation, just getting started with something that may be challenging or difficult. Planning, organization, and time management. Abstract reasoning and concept formation. Working memory in itself, the ability to hold ideas or rules or memories in your mind in order to follow through on a plan, attention control, controlling emotions and social behaviors, and lastly, self-monitoring and regulation, which I might put under metacognition. So those are all separate skills in how we look at them and how we try to teach them, but they're really very interrelated. And, you know, we think of executive functioning as living in the prefrontal cortex, but of course, our brain doesn't work like that in separate little pockets. So it's nice to use metaphors like the executive functions are the air traffic controller of our brain.
Yes.
Or the conductor of the orchestra, the symphonies of our thinking.
Right.
And so it's helpful to think of it that way. But the prefrontal cortex is not fully developed in human beings until now, they're saying maybe even 30 years old, but definitely late 20s.
Oh, that's interesting. I did a show on executive functioning recently, and my guest was speaking about it being 25, and I said, I just read something that said 26,
that's
and
right.
now. So I think the research is still going on, and there's so much we're learning about the frontal lobe.
Yes, and we're learning so much, I think, about brain plasticity, which is such good news. And maybe that's why they're seeing people from 26, 27, 28 still developing these skills and strengths, which is a positive thing. You know, it's a good way to look at it, that if even if you have these weaknesses, you can learn the skills to help you get stronger in those areas. However, ADHD, now that's a little bit different, and because that is a neurobiological developmental disability. And again, the statistics about how many kids actually have it are somewhat controversial, but if you look at Dr. Russ Barkley, who's one of the leaders in this kind of research, he says about 3 to 7% of children actually have a diagnosable attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we call it ADHD is that in the DSM-5, which is the newest version, they decided to just give it one name. So it's all kinds of attention deficit are ADHD, but there's three different types. There's the inattentive type, which is mostly, you know, on the inside. There's the hyperactivity type, which is the kind that you might be able to see in terms of impulses or mm-hmm. fidgeting. And then there's a combined type, which is a little bit of both.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I love that in terms of differentiating, you know, folks still come in and they'll say, my child is diagnosed with ADD. And if you know, not by accident, but I now will always use the term ADHD,
yeah.
And you really have to explain, because there's this sense of, oh, no, my child is not hyperactive. You're
right.
Not, you know, please don't say that my child's hyperactive. But right. A child who has concentration issues, you might have carry the diagnosis of ADD, but not be hyperactive because they're the inattentive type.
That's right.
Right. So we're going to talk a little bit more about this. Let me ask you this. I am some of the books that you mentioned, some great books on this. And what I'd like to do for our listeners is direct them to certainly my website. And if you have a website as well that we could offer to the listeners so that we can list those books up probably later today.
Yeah.
And for me, you could find that on either O'MalleyWellness.com or Be Well with Beth on Facebook. Be Well with Beth, Beth O'Malley, for the Be Well with Beth show. And mm-hmm. for your contact information, is that a place where you have it up online?
No, but I could definitely put it there.
Okay, good.
I have a Facebook page where I'm very active and monitor what I post and the conversations that happen, and it's called School Psyched. Your school psychologist. It's psyched is PSYCHED. So if you look for me there, I also have on Facebook the School Psyched podcast page, and that's along with my two colleagues, Rachel and Anna, where we have a bi-monthly podcast around topics in school psychology.
Wonderful. Okay, great. That's so helpful. And we'll mention that again later on in the show, just so that folks can listen to tune into your podcast as well. What I'd like to do is to go ahead and take a brief break, and we will come back with Rebecca Camizio. This is Beth O'Malley on the Lisa Wexler Show, and I am your guest host today.
Good afternoon. A lot of traffic out there. We've got a 41-minute travel time north on the Connecticut Turnpike from the state line to Route 7 in Norwalk. On the northbound Merritt Parkway from the state line to Route 7, 36 minutes. Becoming a child sponsor with Compassion International can change the world one child at a time. Find out how at compassion.com/radio. I'm Jay Trelease, 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clear early tonight, followed by increasing cloudiness towards daybreak, lows 18 to 24. For tomorrow, cloudy with snow developing by midday, highs 35 to 40. Then periods of snow tomorrow night, lows in the upper 20s. For Sunday, snow ending as snow showers, total snowfall 3 to 5 inches, high temperatures 35 to 40. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher, and that's your Weather Center forecast. From 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Are you looking to cut costs without sacrificing quality? If so, Onboard Services is waiting for you. Onboard Services takes the administrative hassle of running a business off your hands. From payroll to benefit plans, hiring, and outplacement, Onboard does it all. Onboard has trained specialists to provide your organization with employees based on the skill sets you desire. A family-run business for over 40 years, including clientele among Fortune 400 companies, Onboard is experienced in over 100 100 disciplines. For temporary and long-term help, or if you just want to save money without dismissing your current employees, do what the experts do. Call Onboard Services right now. Call 609-945-8009. That's 609-945-8009. Or on the web at www.obcc.net. For a special offer, mention WGCH. Take the hassle out of running your business so you can concentrate on the bottom line. Call Onboard Services today.
Buongiorno tutto quante. This is Miriam DeLuca Melillo Di Felice. And by the way, Di Felice means to be happy. So I hope everyone is always Di Felice. And I know I'm really Di Felice. I am so happy to announce my show is back Saturday from 11 to 12. We'll be talking Italian food, trivia, traditions, and so much more. Lots of Italian music, just wonderful guests. That's Miriam's Italian Hour, Saturday from 11 to 12. Please tune in. And I say grazie and ciao bella.
Welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. The call-in number is 203-661-5051.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back. You're listening to the Lisa Wexler Show today. I'm Beth O'Malley, your guest host. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all. We are here today with Miss Rebecca Camizio of the Stanwich School, and she is the school psychologist there. We're talking about executive functioning and ADHD, and we will be talking next a bit about the research. And the research is really very fascinating. We're starting to differentiate much more clearly between ADHD, the three types of ADHD, and then all of the executive functioning categories. And if you could speak a bit, Rebecca, to that research.
Sure. Yeah, I think one of the reasons that executive functioning is such a hot topic in education is because more and more we understand that it is not their scores on standardized tests or state testing or, any of those assessments that are most predictive of whether they'll be happy and successful in their lives. We are beginning to understand that these, what sometimes are called non-cognitive skills, like self-control or persistence, grit, they're very impactful. And evidence shows us that they are more predictive of success in many cases than IQ, even, which is a very powerful, number.
Right, it's incredible. Yeah. And I think that's where the work that we do and the strategies that we use to support children and to support families, where the strategies are stemming from this incredible research. Yeah. You spoke earlier to the different categories, and when you talked about, for example, cognitive flexibility, just to give our listeners a sense of what these terms mean.
Yeah.
With cognitive flexibility, I'll give an example of when I was working inpatient at St. Raphael's Yale Children's Hospital. When working with kids in group work, there was one exercise that we did, and it was to have every child start with a piece of art, and they would draw for a certain amount of time, not knowing that it was being timed, and it was a group project. And then when the timer went off, we would say, guess what's next? Switch seats, right? And so each kid has to then go to the next drawing and work on the next drawing. And they don't necessarily like that if they don't have cognitive flexibility.
That's right. That's a great activity. I actually use it in my small groups as well.
Yeah.
Because it's telling of whether they need work in that area or whether they can shift and say, okay, I'm going to go with the flow. Cognitive flexibility is such an important executive function, and we really see it beginning to develop again in the very early childhood years. There has been in our culture, and I think it's starting to change, but this push towards, when my kids were little, it was Barney. And Barney would say, you are special because you are you and everybody's special. And then it went from that to kindergarten soccer where everyone got a trophy.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to make our children feel like they are important and they matter. That I'm not having any disagreement with that. But the flexibility to understand that you can't always win and you can't always get what you want is a really important skill that we can begin to teach kids very early, that they, I know you'd like to, have more cake, but that's enough for now. Or I know you wanted to play with that, but now it's time to do something else. Those kinds of consistent messages about what needs to happen and it's time to shift are really important from the very beginning, even sleep schedules. Teaching a child to regulate how they feel so that they can fall asleep themselves is the beginning of cognitive flexibility and many of these executive functioning. I remember Dr. Ferber's book when my children were little. And so I think self-regulation is an important piece to talk about here along with cognitive flexibility, because what is that? What does that mean? Well, children, infants when they're born are regulating a lot of internal stimuli. You know, for a long time, they have been rocked to sleep in the womb and all their needs are instantly met. And there's all of a, then they're born and they're, you know, under, they're getting information from their muscles about where they are in space. And so they startle a lot and they like to be, put in that swaddled in a burrito really tightly. And that's how parents, adults, co-regulate their children's sensations. So we are co-regulators. And when they cry, we often bounce them up and down or pat them. We give them sensory input to let them know that you're okay. I got you.
Right.
But little by little, we have to let them learn what feels good for themselves so that they can regulate, so that they can know, oh, this feeling, that's hunger. You know, oh, I'm hungry, or oh, I'm tired. So, you know, and that extends into preschool. We need to let them lose games, and we need to let them handle disappointment, and we need to let them stumble and fall and fail at things, because all of that, picking themselves up from those disappointments, is about managing the emotions. You know, it starts with managing.
Exactly, right. And during the break, we were talking a little bit about guiding, and not necessarily, there was a push for a while of giving children so many choices. And one of them, I had interviewed Christine D'Alessandro from Sacred Heart. She's the head of the lower school. And one of the pieces of advice that she gave on the air that I thought was just so wonderful is, instead of saying to your small child, would you like to put on your coat? Instead, the statement would be more, not a question, but a statement. It's cold outside. Put on your coat now. Right. So helping the child to internalize your message, learning from you as the parent, and then helping that child to move forward and internalize that message themselves so that they're able not to always question everything, but this is what I need to do because it's reasonable. And
absolutely. I think that's so helpful. I always think of, too, the question that some parents ask with perfectly wonderful intentions, what would you like for dinner? That is a horrible question for a small child. I mean, they don't know, and there's too many choices, and it's overwhelming.
Or in my house, it would be chicken nuggets or mac and cheese, Mom. That's all they would eat at a certain age.
Right. So to have one or two choices is much better often, especially when they're very young, because then you begin to scaffold more choices that they will naturally become aware of as they get older. And when they're in high school, then, you know, they need to manage the multitude of choices that they, do I spend time on the video game or do I do my homework or do I call my friend? Or, you know, there's thousands of choices and we need to help them slowly over time develop the skills that they need to make good choices for themselves.
Now, all of the executive functioning components are actually areas where we as adults continue to struggle. And so it's not just in working with our elementary or lower school or middle school, but it's also through teenage years and early adulthood. And some of the most frustrated parents that I work with in my practice are the folks who come in who have college-age kids, and they're not understanding why their 22-year-old is not making any sense. Right?
Yes. Yes. I agree that these continue to develop through adulthood, and the people that are more successful in developing these skills have strategies that work and also develop really good habits. And the difference between people that are able to do that and people who aren't, sometimes is ADHD, and sometimes it's just about having developed bad habits. So if I know that I'm constantly, you know, feeling like I'm going to be late, then I need a strategy so that I can get to where I'm going on time. So whether it's a reminder in my phone or, you know, a post-it note on my mirror, my bathroom mirror, I have to figure out what works for me. And that happens through adulthood. Richard Branson, he's the CEO of Virgin Atlantic. Mm-hmm. I saw a wonderful interview with him. He's so successful and he's brilliant, but he has terrible ADHD and dyslexia, by the way, and he struggled tremendously in school until he was finally pulled out of school and homeschooled by his mother. But he says, because he has ADHD, his strategy is, I have an executive assistant and she reminds me. She's right there next to me. She acts like she's my frontal lobe. And for some of our kiddos, they need that at first. They need that assistance. They need that externalized frontal lobe until they can build the habits, and whether that is a visual schedule, or however they're going to build the habits, that's how they're going to be successful eventually.
I'm laughing over here. I know you see this big grin on my face, and at the risk of my son being aggravated with me, in second grade he came home and I was asking how was it going, because a teacher had talked to me about organizing his desk, and he said it was excellent. And after a few weeks of this, I got a little suspicious, and I said, how is it that it was such a struggle for you before, and suddenly your desk is always organized? And he explained that a certain little girl in his class organized it every morning for him.
That's a great strategy.
So, I love that. What I'd like to talk to is, what are some other strategies that we can employ to support our children, and perhaps our children, perhaps even our partners?
That's right. Well, I guess, the very first thing we have to do is we have to make sure that our children, however old they are, that it's their goal. Because we can have wonderful goals for our kids, but if it's not also the child's goal, they are just going to feel that shame, because kids want to do well. They want to have adult approval. They want to feel successful. They want to be successful. So they take on our goals out of that guilt or out of that pressure. But I find that it's going to be much less successful unless they understand that that's their goal too.
So there needs to be a buy-in.
There has to be that buy-in. And part of that buy-in is metacognition, having a child think about their own thinking and think about, well, what do I do really well? And where am I weak? What can I work on? And then make a really clearly defined goal. So whether it be, I kind of forget to do my homework, and then it's like 11 p.m. and then I'm up all night, and okay, so I'm starting to hear a goal. What could, let's get more, have the child verbalize a concrete, discrete goal, and then have them also think about, what's the first thing you could do that might help? Well, it might help if I plot it out on my calendar, but I never remember to use my planner. So, okay, now we have other goals, and so to develop a couple of goals, getting the child to voice them is a great way to ensure success, and keeping the goals small, because kids will often say to me in my work at school, well, my goal is I want to get an A. Okay, what are your grades like now? C's,
Right.
it's a fabulous goal, and I would never, never, who am I to say your goal is too big? I would never say that, but let's take it in chunks. Okay, so what would it mean to get it? What do you have to do to get an A? Where do we start? Let's start with, do you do the reading every night? And it's just more manageable that way. It's not as overwhelming, and you're more likely to be successful if you take small goals at a time.
Right. And I love how you even mentioned that if the child is not using the planner, to create goals towards just remembering to use your planner.
Right. Yeah. And I think technology has been so helpful in that arena. I find that Google Calendar makes a great planner, because so many, especially in middle school and high school, kids have cell phones, and I can make that Google Planner, bing, light up on your phone when you least expect it, and then remind you that you have homework for tonight.
Yeah, that's a wonderful resource that you provide to your students. The other, here in Greenwich, we're so blessed that in the public school system now that the children are given electronic devices for their, I don't want to say laptops, because I think that they're tablets.
Right.
But that's now happening at both the elementary, the middle school, and the high school level. Yeah. And I believe in many of the private schools here as well.
Absolutely.
So it's a wonderful tool for helping children to be organized. And there's lots that comes out of that is positive.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is take a break. And when we come back, we will talk a little bit about children who have either ADHD or executive functioning concerns or struggles where it hasn't been caught or diagnosed. And, of course, we're seeing more and more that educators, that parents, that clinicians in the field are catching it early on, but sometimes those issues are not caught until a little bit later into the schooling, and that can be a struggle for kids. So we'll be discussing that at length. This is Beth O'Malley for Lisa Wexler on The Lisa Wexler Show, and we'll be right back.
Good afternoon. We're looking at a 35-minute travel time now northbound on the Connecticut Turnpike from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk. Northbound Murray Parkway from the state line up to Route 7, we're looking at a 27-minute travel time. The girl in Kenya dreams of becoming a doctor. An elder in Guatemala dreams of being part of a community. Reach out, change their world. It will change your own. Unbound.org. I'm Jay Trelease in the 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clear early tonight, followed by increasing cloudiness towards daybreak, lows 18 to 24. For tomorrow, cloudy with snow developing by midday, highs 35 to 40. Then periods of snow tomorrow night, lows in the upper 20s. For Sunday, snow ending as snow showers, total snowfall 3 to 5 inches, high temperatures 35 to 40. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher, and that's your Weather Center forecast. From 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Did you know that many of Connecticut's best accountants, doctors, medical scientists, and teachers got started at Eastern Connecticut State University? It's affordable, yet academically challenging, the best of both worlds. Students study math and astronomy and read Aristotle and Shakespeare in class. Then they go off to apply their skills, studying public health in Ghana, interning at ESPN, conducting research in the rainforests of Costa Rica, or presenting their work at national conferences. Eastern focuses on undergraduate education on a beautiful residential campus, Connecticut's only public liberal arts university, with 39 majors and 58 minors. Visit Eastern on the web today at www.easterncit.edu.
Join us for Marvels of China, Pathways to the Pacific Rim, every Saturday morning at 10:30 on 1490 WGCH. Marvels of China is a colorful, lively international perspective featuring news of business, educational, and cultural events and reveals historical and cultural ties between America and China. That's Marvels of China, every Saturday morning at 10:30 on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. Welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. The call-in number is 203-661-5051.
You are listening to the Lisa Wexler Show today, Friday, March 17th. Happy St. Patrick's Day. This is Beth O'Malley of the Be Well with Beth Show, and I'm your guest host today, along with Miss Rebecca Camizio, who is a school psychologist at Sandwich School right here in Greenwich. And we are, in a few moments, we'll be joined by Dr. Harris Stratner of the Karen Foundation. He's also on the an associate professor of psychiatry at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, and he'll be joining us to discuss substance abuse in our young adults and teens. We'll be focusing today on both opioid abuse as well as marijuana use. But Rebecca, coming back to our discussion that we've had just in terms of executive functioning and ADHD, I wanted to bring it around to treatment and to really look at oftentimes the schools are catching it, our public schools, our private schools. When that's not happening very frequently now, parents are catching it. And there's so much out there in terms of understanding hyperactivity and struggles with getting organized, no longer blaming the child for not being able to really be present in that way for themselves, but now looking at it as, okay, there's a delay in learning there. Can you speak to working on developing those skills and how that might be done?
Sure. So I think that in terms of diagnosis, it's really important to get an accurate diagnosis, and a collaborative approach sometimes is really helpful. So talk to the pediatrician, talk to your school psychologist. She can do assessment, or he can do assessment, and get a really good profile of the child's strengths and weaknesses. If you are sure that this child has ADHD, then the next step in developing a treatment plan is to decide, as the parents, as the family, will I go talk to a psychiatrist? Do I look into medication? It seems as though medication plus CBT has the best success rate in terms of treating the symptoms and helping children learn, because ultimately that's our goal. We want them to be able to function in school so that they can learn at the same rates. However, children with ADHD, as Russ Barkley says, are about 30% younger than their peers. So in terms of these skills, in terms of development of these skills, so a 10-year-old in fifth grade has the executive functioning skills of a 7-year-old in second grade. So our expectations in fifth grade for what they need to plan and organize, pack their backpacks by themselves, remember their lunch, remember that they have a trip next week, we expect a lot from our children, and which is okay, but for a child with ADHD, when we expect them to do all of that without support, without some kind of strategy or treatment, we set them up for failure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
exactly.
We need to talk, I think, about a fully developed plan. Are we going to do medication? Are we going to start with therapy, which includes often includes strategies and skills treatment, but also understanding that metacognitive piece, having kids understand themselves and how they work well and what they need to work on. And the reason that the medication is helpful for children with ADHD is because their brains are underproducing the chemicals that keep one tab open at a time. They have thousands of tabs open all the time, and they don't know how to inhibit that. Oh, I just saw a car. Oh, I just, you know. But when we flood the brain with stimulants, the brain says, oh, now there's too much. Shut it down, shut it down, shut it down. And once they're shutting down that innate production of the stimulants, they can focus, they can stay calm, they can attend to the lesson in class. So sometimes kids that aren't medicated by a psychiatrist or their pediatrician, they will figure out
how to self-medicate.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, it's a funny thing, but as a psychotherapist in my practice, I'm not, you know, some of the psychiatrists that I work with will do a trial run of a Ritalin or Concerta or Adderall medication. Obviously, I'm not licensed to prescribe, but what I'll do is somewhat unique, but it is oftentimes very telling, which is to say, pick a day where, like a Saturday, you have a whole lot of work to do. You're scattered. You're all over the place. You're really having trouble concentrating. I would like you, before you start your homework, to drink coffee or Coke or Coca-Cola or something with caffeine, and let's see if it's harder for you to concentrate or easier for you to concentrate. And I'll tell you what, for the kids who respond well to stimulants, mm-hmm. usually the caffeine they'll call me right away. They'll text me. They're so excited. They can't believe it. They're focused.
Yeah. Sometimes that works really well. Sometimes it's not enough. You know, ADHD is very well treated by exercise as well.
Right.
There's been some good research on that. So sometimes before you have to sit and concentrate, study for a test, prescribing a 1-mile run or a 2-mile run.
Yes,
might be,
exactly. And I should say, I use it as a diagnostic tool, not as treatment.
Right.
Let me just be very clear. I'm not recommending that every time a child does homework, they should have caffeine.
Right.
Absolutely not healthy. So there's the difference with treatment. There's medication and what I call holistic. And for holistic, we might look at CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. We might look at yoga, meditation, mindfulness, positive behaviors. Mm-hmm. And those are more of the holistic psychotherapy. Those are the holistic approaches. And what I think that the research shows is it's really a nice combination of both works well together.
Yes, I agree. I agree that mindfulness, the research on mindfulness, and everyone, listeners out there, can go to mindfulschools.org to check out some of the resources that they have online. Teaching children at any age how to practice that pause can be such a helpful reset, such a helpful strategy for kids with ADHD and, you know, people in general. Often as adults, we have internalized those strategies. If I am in a meeting, a faculty meeting, and I need a break, I can step out and get a drink of water, or I can stretch, or, you know, I can do those things on my own. But you know, I've had a lot of failure up until this point to realize that I can't sit there for 45 minutes without getting up or stretching or moving. So teaching children to take a pause and tune in to what they're thinking and what they're feeling in all different kinds of mindful activities is really helpful. And again, it's positive. It's okay that if we're noticing our thoughts, it's okay that we have 10,000 random thoughts. But noticing them helps us kind of calm down and ground ourselves so that we can then go after our goal and be persistent towards where we want to put our attention.
Absolutely. Well, Rebecca, we're going to take a break, and I know that we have Dr. Harris Stratner on the line. And so when we return, we're going to be talking a bit about marijuana abuse with young adults and teens, as well as opioid abuse. And one of the, it's not a lead-in, but in terms of a child who's gone undiagnosed, who is starting to play with things like marijuana as a means of self-medication, that's where we get very concerned. And so that is really a transition that I'd like to make in coming back from this break. So thank you very much. This is Beth O'Malley on the Lisa Wexler Show for Lisa Wexler.
Good afternoon. We're looking at a 35-minute travel time now northbound on the Connecticut Turnpike from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk. Northbound Merritt Parkway from the state line up to Route 7, we're looking at a 27-minute travel time. The girl in Kenya dreams of becoming a doctor. An elder in Guatemala dreams of being part of a community. Reach out. Change the world. It will change your own. Unbound.org. I'm Jay Trelease in the 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clear early tonight, followed by increasing cloudiness towards daybreak, lows 18 to 24. For tomorrow, cloudy with snow developing by midday, highs 35 to 40. Then periods of snow tomorrow night, lows in the upper 20s. For Sunday, snow ending as snow showers, total snowfall 3 to 5 inches, high temperatures 35 to 40. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher, and that's your Weather Center forecast. From 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Having a child with a learning disability is not easy. Winston Prep knows that. Until now, when your son or daughter was ready for high school, you've had few choices. Either send him away to boarding school, where he'll get that special attention he needs, or you take a shot at the local public high school, where you'll spend so much time trying to get them to provide enough support. But now there's another option. The Winston Prep School, located right in Norwalk. Winston Prep School is the only day high school for kids with learning disabilities. Actually, they start at grade 6 going through grade 12. Every child benefits from the FOCUS program, a daily one-on-one instructional session. Winston's highly trained teachers instruct kids with both language-based and nonverbal learning disabilities. If you're a parent who wakes up every morning and says, "What can I do today to make my kid's life a little better, to increase her chances of success?" then give Winston Prep a call at 203-229-0465. That's 203-229-0465. Or sign up for one of their upcoming open houses. Winston Prep may be the answer you've been looking for.
Hi, this is Sid Mark with more of the March Sounds of Frank Sinatra, and the legend continues from the classic Nice and Easy from March of 1960 with Nelson to South Pacific March of 1951, and a great reprise single session from March of 1975, and let us remember, in hour number two, a tribute to Frank Sinatra Jr. This week's Sounds of Sinatra, my name is Sid Mark, and you're invited.
This Sunday evening from 5 till 7 on 1490 WGCH. Welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. The call-in number is 203-661-5051.
Good afternoon. You are listening to the Lisa Wexler Show today, Friday, March 17th. This is Beth O'Malley, your guest host, and happy St. Patrick's Day to all. I am here today with Rebecca Camizio, school psychologist at Stanwich School here in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I'd like to welcome Dr. Harris Stratner, PhD. He is a licensed doctor of psychology, as well as an internationally recognized expert on addiction. He specializes in co-occurring disorders and is currently the vice president and New York Regional Clinical Director of the Caron Treatment Center. He's also the clinical associate professor of psychiatry at Mount Sinai School of Medicine. Dr. Stratner is best known for his unique approach of carefrontation with addicted individuals and patients with psychiatric diagnosis. He co-authored the PDR Guide to Pediatric and Adolescent Mental Health First Edition. He's a frequent lecturer at major rehabilitation and psychiatric facilities, and he actually co-hosted his own radio show for over 28 years. I know as well, Dr. Streitner, that you're also a frequent guest on national TV programs. So welcome, and I'm so glad to have you here today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Beth, and a very happy, healthy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you so much. And I think we never had the chance to work together, but as you know, I started my my work at the Care and Treatment Center. And so this is the first time I've had the pleasure of interviewing someone on my show from Karen. And so that's really special for me today.
Well, it's great. It's great to be with you. I've been a guest with Lisa when she was on another station. We won't mention that, but what it was called. But I know Lisa quite well and admire her and her wonderful interviewing skills.
Oh, she is terrific. Very much a role model for me. So I am here, and so this is Rebecca Camizio, just to introduce you.
Hello.
Hi, Rebecca.
We were just talking about the different components of executive functioning. We talked a bit about the basics around diagnosing ADHD and the three types of ADHD. Mm-hmm. And we spoke a bit about strategies to support that. And what I wanted to do is to have you speak a bit to your work, both at Karen, but in private practice and throughout the years in terms of working with folks with these issues and what you've seen with your clients that have addiction issues and present with using, for example, marijuana or drinking or cocaine to self-medicate or self-regulate in essence, but then it becoming a problem.
Absolutely. One of the first people that's brought the self-medication model to our attention was Edward Kantzian, a colleague of mine out of Harvard, and talked a lot about folks who like to self-medicate, who are their own doctors, so to speak. And you oftentimes can, and I've done this with my medical students and my pediatric residents. We have a pediatric residency training program here at Karen, New York, where we work with Cornell pediatric residents and also at Lenox and also at Mount Sinai, my own medical school where I'm a professor. And one of the things we always talk about is the fact that you can almost diagnose somebody based upon the drugs of abuse, especially adolescents. And one of the most dangerous drugs, I just was on the Wall Street Journal television program on Fox and was talking about how dangerous marijuana has become. I'm also a jazz musician, and as somebody who grew up in the 70s, was not a big fan of marijuana, but it was a much different drug. As a result of the increased level of tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, it's about 20 times stronger. And recently we had a statistic at Karen Treatment Centers in Pennsylvania, where 92.1% of our admissions for adolescents is for marijuana as their primary drug of choice. And we know as researchers, scientists, and clinicians that marijuana has a tremendous effect on the frontal lobe, part of the neocortex, and that continues to develop the frontal lobe, continues to develop through the age of 25. And marijuana can affect your motivation, your sense of memory, short-term to long-term memory conversion, your judgment, and things of that nature. So it's really not a drug you want to see your adolescents do when they're going from high school and trying to get into a good college.
Right, exactly. And we were just talking about, I had a guest on recently talking about frontal lobe development, and I had mentioned that I had just read some new research that was saying now we're looking at 26, and in fact, Rebecca has just read some research this week speaking to it may be even age 30 where it's fully, fully developed for everyone.
Yeah, when I wrote the PDR pediatric and the physician's desk reference on pediatric and adolescent mental health, along with my co-author, Dr. Michael Bahar, who's a pediatric and adolescent psychiatrist and I work very closely with, we talked about the potential of seeing that age go up in terms of frontal lobe development. And we did mention the year age 26 and possibly as high as approaching 30. So that's a scary thought. You know, it's a really scary thought, especially with something like marijuana. And also, marijuana, you know, now legal in 28 states, and if you count Washington, D.C., 29, and you start to see confused messages to adolescents who, you know, are reading in chat rooms that it's safe and there's no danger and it's used for medical purposes and it's easy to get a prescription in places like California and Washington State and Colorado. It's very confusing to them at a time when they're going through tremendous changes in their body to begin with. And when we see in a recent household study, other drugs of abuse like tobacco and alcohol going down, and we see marijuana use going up, it's frightening.
It really is. It's just incredible to me. And it's what's interesting to me is that you say that 92.1% of your admissions at Karen that are adolescents are smoking marijuana, and that's the primary drug of choice. Because I'll tell you, the three young adults that I had go through your program, and all three are doing beautifully now. But all three were using marijuana probably 1 to 10 times a day every single day, and they were a mess. And it took not just going through your program, but all three young men actually needed 3 to 12 months of sober living after that experience. And you know, we call it sober living still, but the truth of the matter was alcohol was not an issue. It was always the marijuana.
And let me tell you just how dangerous it is. We know that one of the reasons why we have medical marijuana is because it has anti-emetic properties. It prevents you from vomiting, getting nauseous, and that's why it's very considered by some to be very helpful when you're having chemotherapy, radiation, etc. But we also know that kids who pregame will smoke marijuana and then they will drink. And because their gag reflex is inhibited and they can't vomit, they will end up developing alcohol poisoning, which I can tell you in my years of working I was also director of addiction medicine at Cornell New York Presbyterian Hospital, Westchester, and White Plains Hospital and United Hospital. Years of being in ERs saw so many kids who had alcohol poisoning as a result of pre-gaming with marijuana.
I really appreciate your explanation of that. What we're going to do is take a break, and when we come back, I'd really like to focus more on some of the concerns that you're seeing in terms of marijuana and now the increase of opioid abuse by young adults and by teenagers. So this is Beth O'Malley at The Lisa Wexler Show, and we'll be taking a brief break, and we'll be back right back to join Dr. Harris Streitner.
You're listening to the station you grew up with, 1490 WGCH, Greenwich.
Again, that's 800-504-1639, 800-504-1639. That's Citizens Disability, 800-504-1639.
Biz Talk Radio.
Spy games preempting North Korea. I'm Michael Toscano. President Trump mired once again in unsubstantiated claims that both President Obama and the British government spied on him. The president bringing up the issue during a news conference with German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
As far as wiretapping, I guess, by, you know, this past administration,
At least we have something in common, perhaps.
The president also deflecting criticism that his White House falsely linked British intelligence to spying on him by saying it was the fault of Fox News.
So you shouldn't be talking to me, you should be talking to Fox.
Fox News says it has seen no evidence the British spied on Mr. Trump. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says it may be necessary to take preemptive military action against North Korea because of its nuclear weapons and missiles.
All the options are on the table. Certainly we do not want to... for things to get to a military conflict. We're quite clear in that in our communications.
Secret Service still looking for that stolen laptop in New York. I'm Michael Toscano. The Environmental Protection Agency has awarded $100 million to help fund infrastructure upgrades in Flint, Michigan to help ease the crisis with their lead-tainted water. Marlos Majerus is reporting on the end of the mystery of the jammed-up 911 call center in Dallas.
Authorities initially believed that T-Mobile phones were somehow inundating 911 with ghost calls, which are automatically generated by a phone unbeknownst to its owner. But officials say that it was actually abandoned 911 calls that were a source of the problem. Callers would hang up after dialing 911, and dispatchers were then obligated to return the call to determine if there was an emergency. But that in itself created a long backlog of calls. Additional dispatchers will be added until changes can be implemented, including technological upgrades. I'm Marlis Majerus.
On Wall Street, the Nasdaq hit a new high for a while but ended up unchanged for the day. The Dow lost 18, the S&P lost 3. I'm Michael Toscano.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, I just got to town, and I need a presentation printed for a big meeting tomorrow.
Well, Staples has everything you need to print, scan, and fax.
Great. Oh, just got a text. The home office made changes to the presentation.
No problem. You can access your files from a USB, email, or the cloud.
And the meeting isn't tomorrow. Now it's today.
Our machines are self-service, so there's no waiting.
And it's not here. Now it's in Ebensburg.
I hear it's lovely this time of year.
Print, scan, fax, and copy at Staples. Your office away from home.
With Advance Auto Parts in-store pickup service, you can buy any part online and pick it up in-store in just 30 minutes. It's this fast. Buy your parts online and pick it up in store in just 30 minutes. No, faster. Buy your parts online and pick it up in 30 minutes. Buy parts online and pick it up in 30 minutes. Buy parts online and pick it up in 30 minutes. Nailed it. Advance Auto Parts. Let's get you back on the road. Visit advanceautoparts.com for more details.
Well, maybe now they'll really feel like whistling while they work. Employees at Disney winning a ruling today from the Labor Department.
Disney will have to pay more than 16,000 workers in Florida close to $4 million in back wages. The payouts will go to people who work at Disney Vacation Club Management Corporation and Walt Disney Parks and Resorts, which include Florida's Disney World. The Labor Department found Disney violated wage laws by deducting a uniform or costume expense from the paychecks of some employees, causing their pay to fall below the federal minimum wage, which is $7.25 an hour. The federal government also determined Disney did not compensate employees for the time they spent performing pre-shift duties. I'm Ann Cates.
The second full day of the NCAA tournament in full swing. Michigan opening the day with a 92-91 squeaker win over Oklahoma State in the Midwest Regional. Baylor using a big second half to knock off New Mexico State 91-73 in the East. Arkansas slipping past Seton Hall 71-71 in the South Regional. Top seeds North Carolina and Kansas also playing later. I'm Michael Toscano.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
Don't miss Scott's Days at Ace. It's our biggest lawn and garden sale of the spring. So before you get to work on your yard, head into Ace now to save on Scott's, Miracle-Gro, Roundup, Ortho, and more. Now through Monday only, stock up and save over $600 on select Scott's products across the store. And as always, the help is free. Spring is here, and that means so are Scott's Days. Only at your local Ace. Offers valid through March 20th at participating stores. Includes instant savings offers for Ace Rewards members. See store for details.
Check that out.
Is Bill doing the Running Man?
Yep. Bill just switched to Cricket Wireless, and he's really feeling this whole free phone thing. He got a free Samsung Galaxy Amp2 when he switched on the plan.
Good afternoon. Lots of traffic on the turnpike. Busy ride southbound through Stamford and Greenwich. Northbound, our travel time from the state line up to Route 7, 39 minutes. Caring for an older adult is a tough one. It isn't easy. Visit AARP.org/caregiving, brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council. I'm Jay Trelease in the 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
Be inspired. This is Lisa Wexler. Every Saturday morning at 10, join us for the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award, a special program featuring the kids in our neighborhoods doing independent research in science, technology, engineering, and math. Hear from the students themselves about their discoveries, how music improves memory loss. One student invented a better bicycle. Apply free on Accorda.com, ACORDA.com. Tune in every Saturday morning at 10 here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
It's the Lisa Wexler Show. Phone lines are open. Call 203-661-5051.
Good afternoon. You are listening to the Lisa Wexler Show today. I am Beth O'Malley, your guest host this Friday, March 17th. And welcome back. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I am here with two of my guests today, and we'll be joined later on by Dr. Carrie Wilkins of New York City and the Berkshire CMC program. In terms of what we've been discussing for the beginning part of the show, we've had some discussion on ADHD, some discussion on executive functioning, and then we moved into talking about treatment for both of those, as well as substance abuse and looking at how sometimes children are turning towards, teens are turning towards using substances to self-medicate, those issues as well as many other issues. And I wanted to ask Dr. Streitner, can you talk a little bit about the impact that legalization is having on both our adult and teenage population?
Yeah, I think, you know, Karen Treatment Centers, and we're one of the oldest and largest rehabs in the United States with outpatient posts in various major cities, and inpatient in Wernersville, PA, and also we're in Delray Beach with several programs. One of our most famous is Renaissance, and another program that we have is Ocean Drive. But having said that, we don't really take a big stance on, you know, medical marijuana, but we do talk about legalization. And I'll just speak for myself in this case, not as the VP of Karen, but I will tell you that I don't think we've done our complete due diligence with regard to legalization of marijuana. And recently I was on one of the morning talk shows. I think it was the Today Show, I can't recall. And I was saying that one of the things we need to be cognizant of is the argument we always get, well, alcohol is the most dangerous drug there is, and that's legal. Well, why compound, in my humble opinion, why compound the fracture? Why do we have to add marijuana, which we just got through talking about, affects the prefrontal lobe, has all kinds of impact on motivation, and I started out originally with the founder of Center for Motivation and Change, along with Carrie, Dr. Wilkins, Jeff Foote, and doing working independently but on the same things. I started out with motivational interviewing and the work of James Prochaska. And one of the things, when you want to motivate somebody, you've got to go through stages. And, you know, it's a very difficult thing to try to help somebody go through the stages of readiness to change. And some of the work of Miller and Rolnick and Norcross and DiClemente, and of course Jim Prochaska at the University of Rhode Island Cancer Prevention Research Institute, when you're getting messages that marijuana is being legalized. And I just don't think we need to add to those complications. On the other hand, the reality is it looks like marijuana is going to be legalized. It looks like a lot of people, adults, feel it's a very safe drug. I happen to know as a researcher it is not. But I think that we have to, as I always say, meet the patient where they're at. And and I like to use the word teleological because it has a spiritual kind of connotation to it. My teleological goal, my spiritual goal in dealing with addiction, which is a primary progressive chronic, and if not treated, potentially fatal and a biopsychosocial disease is to work from many angles. Not just, and we do that at CARA, not just to focus on the physiological, but to also focus on doing mindfulness meditation, something that's been around for years, using some of the Buddhist aspects of dialectical behavior therapy. I remember the first time I met Marshall Linehan at Cornell, looking at ego psychology, some of the work of the great Otto Kernberg, looking at all schools of psychology and extrapolating what works effectively to try to help youngsters to understand that first, perhaps, and it may sound corny, they want to get high on life before they start getting high on substances. Now, do I think experimentation is part of growing up and developing? Yeah, I do. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't look at the genetic predisposition in kids' lives and understand that they may have addiction in their families, they may have a psychiatric issue. We know that marijuana can affect kids who have a predisposition to things like schizoaffective disorder and schizophrenia. And I'm not here to talk about things like moderation management, but I am here to talk about harm reduction. And anybody who works in the medical field, whether it be an MD, a PhD, or both, needs to do no harm. And I think one of the greatest ways to do no harm is to try to encourage kids not to get into using marijuana.
Absolutely. Absolutely agreed. And, you know, one of the stumbling blocks that I come across in my practice is that when I'm talking to parents who appear to be on board, and then I start working with the children, there are many occasions where the children will disclose to me that they know that their parents are abusing the substance. And so while the parents are not aware that the kids are aware that they're using, the kids are saying, well, my mom and dad do that now instead of drinking.
I was the editor, guest editor of Central Nervous System Spectrum. A couple of years ago, probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, and one of the things that I talked about was that addiction is a family disease. And I have seen more kids smoke marijuana with their parents.
Right.
And their parents, you know, and I'm not one of them who would smoke marijuana with my kid, but one of the parents is a baby boomer. And, you know, sometimes baby boomers want to be cool and they want to connect with their kids. Well, there are a lot better ways to connect with your children than to smoke marijuana with them and to engage in things that can lead to other drug experimentation. Kids are about experimenting.
Right.
And
right.
One of the things we're seeing in this country more and more, Beth and Rebecca, and I think you would both agree, is we've got an opiate epidemic. And, you know, kids who do opiates don't just do opiates. They also smoke marijuana, they drink, they do hallucinogens.
Exactly.
It's not in isolation. And it's frightening for me. We see at Karen a tremendous amount of opiate abuse, and now kids are using heroin because it's cheaper than trying to get a hold of prescription medication and easier.
Right.
So
right.
In making that transition to opiates, within the past 2 years, we had 276,000 adolescents who were current non-medical users of pain relievers and 122,000 having an addiction to prescription pain relievers, and that number has grown exponentially.
Exactly.
It's very frightening.
And what I'm seeing here is that there, before it was easier, maybe 5 years ago, to obtain some of those substances on the street, it's not as easy now, and I'm having such an increase in terms of the opiate use, you know, on street drugs as opposed to pills.
You know, I'm the vice chairman of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, and one of the things that we see, again, is that kids are turning to heroin. And now heroin is so strong that it can be used nasally, so they don't have to get involved in skin popping or injecting, intramuscular, et cetera. And one of the things we do that I love about Karen Treatment Center, and I've referred to Karen long before I was the regional clinical vice president in New York, because they do such a wonderful job with everyone, but particularly with adolescents who they have several breakout programs for. and that is to use a holistic approach. You know, a lot of kids don't want to go to 12-step meetings. We encourage 12-step meetings, but, you know, you have to meet the patient where they're at. Kids particularly vote with their feet, and you can't treat an empty chair. So you try to engage. Frieda Fromm Reichman, the great neo-Freudian, said the most important variable is therapeutic alliance. And you try to establish a therapeutic alliance. And what we try to do, in addition to perhaps using initially something like Suboxone, which is a combination of buprenorphine, which is a partial agonist, and naloxone, which is an antagonist, is we also try to use mindfulness meditation, DBT, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist. We talk to them, we educate them, we do family educational programs on the weekends with their parents, and we try to help them understand the dangers in doing these substances. So it's a holistic approach, and we use a lot of Vivitrol, and we encourage kids when they get out to use Vivitrol, which is injectable naltrexone, so that they don't have the ability to get high. It's also effective in naltrexone in decreasing alcohol cravings, along with something called Campril. So we're very very involved in science and what we call evidence-based practice at Karen.
Dr. Streitner, I've been listening so intently. What you're saying is so powerful and resonates with me, both as a parent and as someone who cares for kids in my school setting. And I really get that sense that it really takes the community to get together in order to help kids avoid the pitfalls of these drugs. And and we know that our children, especially with ADHD, are especially vulnerable. And I'm wondering what you might suggest for a school psychologist like myself when working with kids to when to intervene. If we know that they are just maybe, you know, having this sense that, it's just marijuana, everyone does it. Or, I hear that all the time. Everyone drinks, you know, even my own children, mom. Everyone drinks on the weekends. And I think, one, that's probably not true, that their friends are making bad choices. But where do we start as people that care about kids? How do we start addressing some of these myths and supporting our kids to make better choices?
Well, you know, Carefrontation, my school of psychology, where I did most of my research on it originally at Four Winds Hospital and when I was a division director at Cornell Westchester. Carefrontation talks about treating people with respect and dignity, not shaming or blaming them, not talking down to tweens and teens, but having a dialogue with them, sitting around the dinner table or going out to dinner. You know, I can relate to Greenwich. I live in Scarsdale, and these affluent communities are no different than any other communities, and we have to open up. It doesn't mean you should share your drug use or your war stories, as we say in 12-step programs, with your kids. You don't need to volunteer and say, oh, I used to get high and I dropped acid, et cetera. You don't need to do that. But what you do need to do is talk to them and, more than anything, become an educated listener. Listen to what your kids have to say and always tell them, no matter what they do, you're going to be there for them. If they need a ride, even if they got high or did something that you don't approve of, you're there for them. But at the same time, I always like to say, and my daughter, who's now a doctor of psychology and one of my partners in Streitner and Associates, she never smoked marijuana. I think she got a lecture from my godfather, who was a well-known jazz musician, and she just never did it. And not every kid is doing drugs and alcohol. That's just not true. But a lot of them who do experiment, and I'm not saying experimentation isn't a normal part of development, but it can be a dangerous part of development, and you should know your family's genetic history. You should know whether or not your grandparents had alcoholism or had cross addiction or had bipolar disorder or what we now call mood spectrum disorder, or were in the autistic spectrum. You should not be afraid to share that you've had panic attacks and things of that nature, and that you need to be aware of these things. I believe, as Sims always says, the educated consumer is our best customer, and that applies more than to anybody, to adolescents.
Absolutely. And using a tool such as a genogram, or basically that's a psychological family tree for our listeners, is such a way to start to educate a teenager as to what the family system really looks like. And I think that's so crucial to look at. Is there a ADHD somewhere in the family system? Is there a blood relative who has bipolar disorder or anxiety, for example? And educate the teen so that they know what all of that could mean for them, or not only for them, but perhaps for their children.
Exactly. Exactly. Very well stated.
Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us today, Dr. Stratner. And we are going to be going to a commercial break. And when we come back, we will be with Dr. Carrie Wilkins. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
My pleasure. And you're about to interview, in my humble opinion, one of the great researchers and writers and clinicians in the field, Carrie Wilkins.
Thank you so much. All right, this is Beth O'Malley here on the Lisa Wexler Show.
Good afternoon. Lots of traffic on the turnpike. Busy ride southbound through Stamford and Greenwich. Northbound, our travel time from the state line up to Route 7, 39 minutes. Caring for an older adult is a tough one. It isn't easy. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council. I'm Jay Trelease in the 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clear early tonight, followed by increasing cloudiness towards daybreak, lows 18 to 24. For tomorrow, cloudy with snow developing by midday, highs 35 to 40. Then periods of snow tomorrow night, lows in the upper 20s. For Sunday, snow ending as snow showers, total snowfall 3 to 5 inches, high temperatures 35 to 40. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher, and that's your Weather Center forecast from 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
It felt like all my tension disappeared.
When is the last time you felt truly relaxed? Welcome to Nervana, N-E-R-V-A-N-A, a brand new bioelectric product. Invented by two doctors, Nervana is a special set of headphones that, when worn, stimulates your vagus nerve, the nerve which releases neurotransmitters that make you feel relaxed and happy.
This is how I feel after a great massage.
You'll be listening to music and go into that deep meditation zone within minutes. No side effects, no medicine, no hangover. That's Nervana. Completely natural.
After a few minutes with Nirvana, I had my best night's sleep in years.
Use it before you go to sleep, on a train or a plane. Nirvana headphones, surprisingly affordable with a 30-day money-back guarantee if you're not satisfied. Order now at experiencenirvana.com or call 844-637-8262. Mention the Lisa Wexler Show for a chance to win a free Nirvana kit.
Hi, I'm WWE Chief Brand Officer Stephanie McMahon with my husband, Paul Triple H Levesque.
In 2014, we created Connor's Cure to honor Connor Mihalik, a young WWE fan that lost his battle to pediatric cancer. Now, we're partnering with the V Foundation to fund pediatric cancer research and to fight for the 12,000 children diagnosed with pediatric cancer every year.
We encourage you to join the fight. To learn more or to donate, please visit jimmyv.org and click on Connor's Cure.
Welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. The call-in number is 203-661-5051.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Lisa Wexler Show today, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, and I'm Beth O'Malley from Be Well with Beth, and I'm your guest host today. I am here with both Rebecca Camizio from the Sandwich School, a school psychologist, as well as Dr. Carrie Wilkins. Welcome, Dr. Wilkins.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You just had such a warm, beautiful welcome from Dr. Harris Stratner, who was with us for a bit talking about opiates and marijuana use and treatment of such from the Karen Foundation, and he's quite a fan.
Yeah, I heard that. That was very nice. And he's been working in this field for a very long time, so I take that as a huge compliment.
Ah, wonderful. Well, what I would like to do is let our audience know a little bit about your background first, and then we're going to be talking a bit about support of our of parents and how parents can support their children with all of these issues, not just with substance abuse issues, but also with regard to diagnosis of ADHD and executive functioning concerns. So Dr. Carrie Wilkins is the co-founder and clinical director of the Center of Motivation and Change in New York City, which is a private practice of psychologists who specialize in the treatment of substance abuse, compulsive behavior disorder, and trauma, and they use a variety of evidence-based treatments. Now, what's so fascinating to me is that you then move forward as a partner in CMC Berkshires, which is a private inpatient residential program which employs the same treatment approaches. And that is a facility that I have been to twice to, not for my own treatment, Dr. Wilkins, but have been up to tour just when you were about to open, and then most recently about 3 months ago. And I was just blown away by the setting. You know, I come out of the Karen Foundation having worked there and actually lived on campus for a few years. And going up and being in this incredible setting and then looking at this not as just a comfortable, safe place to be that feels like home, but the fact that treatment is so evidence-based. I mean, you've done so much work in making sure that you're looking at all aspects of the whole person, not just that they're using a substance, but what are the underlying issues, what are the traumas. And so I just wanted to mention that. Now, you've also co-authored an award-winning book, Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change, which I should mention is the one book I give out all of the time. So I can never get enough copies of that when I come to visit. And you co-authored that with Dr. Foote and
Nicole Kasanke. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And so you've also more recently written co-authored a user-friendly workbook for parents. And it's the 20-minute guide, a guide for parents about how to help their child change their substance use. And this is an area that there has not been anything written about that I've found before. So this is just, it's such a great resource for us. Can you speak a bit to the parent support network that you've been putting together?
Sure. You know, in all those years of the different treatment programs and having them grow and develop and just seeing hundreds of substance users and their families, the one thing... And the field is changing, thank goodness, towards more evidence-based strategies. But I think the message that families get is still a long ways away from being evidence-based in many ways. You know, the amount of shame and stigma around substance users in their families is pretty stunning, and it's really unlike any other medical or psychiatric condition other than obesity. Most Americans think substance users are just people who make bad decisions, selfish choices, and they think the only way they're going to get better is to go to rehab, go to 12-step meetings, probably have to bottom out, destroy their lives in order to be able to do that. Their families also get a really unfortunate message, which is that there's nothing they can do. While their loved one spirals into hell, they're told they need to set hard limits, use tough love, get treatment for their own disease of codependency, a disease that actually doesn't exist. So all of that is pretty shocking, and I spend a lot of time on the phone with families who've gotten that message, and they're talking about their children who they're terrified about, whether it's, you know, this opiate epidemic has definitely kind of brought addiction out of the shadows. It's in the press. Everybody's talking about it. But they're getting these, so they're desperate. They want to help their child. I've never met a parent who's not willing to sacrifice basically anything for their child to be healthy, and they're getting the message that there's really not a lot you can do. And it's more of a layperson message. I mean, I think some of the treatment programs are changing, but there still is a message about it's tough love. You might have to let them bottom out, you know, distance yourself, all that kind of stuff, and it's just confusing for parents. So the treatment that we use at CMC in both places and what the book is about, actually, is something called Community Reinforcement and Family Training, which is a big, long acronym for a really effective set of behavioral strategies that parents can learn. It covers all areas when it comes to kind of trying to help your child. It helps them figure out what are the things you can reinforce that really support healthy, sober behavior. What are the limits you want to set, and how can you be effective in setting those limits? How do you communicate about the problem? How do you communicate just in general so that your family functions better and you can talk about tough subjects like substance use? And then how, as a family, can you take care of yourself? The interesting thing about CRAFT is what they've found in studies is that the whole family system gets healthier. So the parent comes and learns CRAFT, and what happens is the substance use and the child actually goes down, and the whole family's well-being and mental health goes up. So that's exactly what parents want, right?
Right, exactly.
They want their child to be healthier and not using substances, and they want to feel better.
Yeah.
And this is part of what CRAFT really does. And nobody really uses CRAFT, and nobody talks about CRAFT. And so that's why we wrote the book, and the 20-minute guide is all based on CRAFT principles. And we made it so that you can purchase the guide for, it's a nominal fee just for the workbook itself, but you can also download the sessions for free. And it's just quick little sessions for parents to kind of really orient themselves to how do I actually approach this with my child in a way that might actually help them change and make smarter decisions around their substance use.
Wonderful. Now, I'll put that up on my Facebook page, Be Well with Beth O'Malley Wellness, as well as my page, O'MalleyWellness.com, and Rebecca will as well. But how can folks find that book?
So the book is, you can just get, there's a website for it. It's called BeyondAddictionBook.com, and then you can also just buy it on Amazon or other book. I think it's on Barnes & Noble. And so you can get the book and the workbook in both of those ways. And you can go to the 20MinuteGuide.com website, and that's where you can download the sessions for free.
Okay, so you would Google the 20-minute guide.
Yeah, and okay. That gets you the free sessions. And the parent support network, so what we did with the Partnership for Drug Free, we started about 3 years ago, and they just have access to this unbelievable pool of parents who really have been kind of in the traditional treatment world, like getting these mixed messages, and a lot of them have had kids that have actually overdosed and died. They've had kids that still have active problems. They've got kids who've gotten better. And these are parents that want to give back to other parents. And one of the things that we struggle with, and I'm sure you guys feel the same, telling a parent what to do or making suggestions to a parent, like you can do that as a therapist and have some sway and some effect, thank goodness. But to get that message from another parent who's actually been through it with their child is unbelievably powerful. So we've been training these parents to be coaches to other parents in these evidence-based strategies. And you can call the partnership hotline number and talk to one of these parents that we've trained. They just give you smart, evidence-based suggestions of ways you could possibly help your child. And then they do sessions from the workbook with them and help them really start to utilize the workbook. So it's just another free resource that families can really take advantage of.
And that's already up and running.
Yeah. So we've been doing that for 3 years with the partnership and have trained about 300 parent coaches across the country to man this hotline. And then just last month, we started CMC Training Institute, which is going to be our not-for-profit arm that is going to be just designed to get funding and resources so that we can get these resources for families farther out into the United States outside of New York City, because we're a little trapped here and we want to be able to go train treatment professionals and these parents, because there's parent groups all over the country, and a lot of them really want resources and communities want resources. The DEA is bringing us into Oklahoma. We just did one in New Hampshire, bringing in to, kind of train communities and community first responders and a variety of different people in the community to have these methods kind of at their fingertips when they're trying to intervene with families. So that's what CMC Training Institute is all going to be about.
Okay,
I'm super excited about. I grew up in Kansas and in the middle of nowhere, and I know people don't have resources.
Right.
We're incredibly spoiled on the East Coast and West Coast. The middle
exactly.
of the country and other parts of the country, there's not the resources you need, so families need to be prepared because it's in their home.
And that's what's so nice about having this hotline available to parents is that you can call in from anywhere. I know I've had I had two families within the last several years move down south along the East Coast, but still into areas that I would not consider rural, but yet the resources were really very minimal.
And
we are so spoiled here. What I want to do, we're going to take a break. Before we do that, I want to mention that right here in Greenwich, we have just an incredible resource available to us. It's a mom. Her name is Stephanie Marcusano, and she's the founder and president of the Harris Project. And it's a non-for-profit that really works to spread education around co-occurring disorders. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Greenwich High School here in town has just chartered their very first CODA club, which is a co-occurring disorders awareness club. Mm-hmm. And the first week for CODA will be April 1st through 8th. I'm going to have Stephanie on my show on Monday at 2 p.m. here at WGCH 1490 or WGCH.com as part of the Greenwich Sentinel radio hour. And we will be talking about the club and about the clinical concerns there. But also on March 20th at 2 p.m. in Greenwich, there's going to be a presentation. You know what? I'm giving the wrong date for that. That's the date of the show. On April 4th, there's going to be a presentation that's open to the public called Stress, Success, and Teenage Setbacks. Mm-hmm. And they'll be addressing athletes' injury and recovery and looking at substance misuse by athletes and co-occurring disorders coming out of the shadows and into the light. So I just wanted to let our listeners know about that program. It's very exciting. It's the third Stress, Success, and Teenage Setbacks. And one of the neat things about this program is that the community comes together. There are several groups, including the United Way, Arch Street, Greenwich High School. I've been involved. And they come together with the teenagers. And so the presenters are actually the kids themselves. And we bring in professionals as well. But we have children come in. Some have graduated from school in town, both private and public. Some are in college now. Some are adults now. Some are still in school. But they get up and share their stories of struggles and their stories of hope.
Sounds really great.
Yeah, it's a neat program. All right, well, on that note, I am going to take a brief break, and we will be right back. This is Beth O'Malley on The Lisa Wexler Show.
Looking at a lot of heavy traffic north on the Turnpike. Our travel time for the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk is 49 minutes. Northbound Merritt, there's an accident right at Exit 31. Some heavy traffic behind it. Think lead poisoning is just a problem of the past? Think again. One in four kids lives in a home with potential lead paint hazards. Learn more. Be safe. LeadSafeAmerica.org. I'm Jay Trelease, 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clear early tonight, followed by increasing cloudiness towards daybreak, lows 18 to 24. For tomorrow, cloudy with snow developing by midday, highs 35 to 40. Then periods of snow tomorrow night, lows in the upper 20s. For Sunday, snow ending as snow showers, total snowfall 3 to 5 inches, high temperatures 35 to 40. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher, and that's your Weather Center forecast. From 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Are you looking to cut costs without sacrificing quality? If so, Onboard Services is waiting for you. Onboard Services takes the administrative hassle of running a business off your hands. From payroll to benefit plans, hiring, and outplacement, Onboard does it all. Onboard has trained specialists to provide your organization with employees based on the skill sets you desire. A family-run business for over 40 years, including clientele among Fortune 400 companies, Onboard is experienced in over 100 disciplines. For temporary and long-term help, or if you just want to save money without dismissing your current employees, do what the experts do. Call Onboard Services right now. Call 609-945-8009. That's 609-945-8009 or on the web at www.obcc.net. For a special offer, mention WGCH. Take the hassle out of running your business so you can concentrate on the bottom line. Call Onboard Services today.
Ooh-wah, 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 ooh-wah. welcome to the Doo-Wop to Soul Show, coming to you over 1490 WGCH.
Records in front of me, my butt at my side, doesn't get any better than this.
This is the Soul Man Yan saying, I will catch you on the flip side.
And this is Nay saying, ciao.
Doo-Wop to Soul, heard Saturday nights from 8 till 10 and Sunday afternoons from noon till 2. Welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. The call-in number is 203-661-5051.
Good afternoon. Happy St. Patrick's Day and welcome back. You are listening to the Lisa Wexler Show today, Friday, March 17th, and I am Beth O'Malley from Be Well with Beth, your guest host. And I am here today with Rebecca Camizio, school psychologist at Stanwich School here in Greenwich, as well as Dr. Carrie Wilkins, the co-founder and clinical director of the Center for Motivation and Change in both New York City and CMC Berkshires. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do is talk a bit to tie in the guide for parents and the CRAFT program that is evidence-based in terms of working with children to not just how we would use that tool for working with kids with substance abuse issues or marijuana or opiate or alcohol abuse, but that is a tool that can also be used for the underlying issues, the clinical issues, such as ADHD or executive functioning delays. And so what I'd like to do is just ask you, Dr. Wilkins, how could that tool be helpful to parents?
Well, it's one of the things I say about the book Beyond Addiction is that I wish every parent would read it before their kid starts to use drugs and alcohol, because all of the strategies in it are really about being able to know what you're seeing, right? So being able to really, like, notice when somebody's behavior is changing, being able to recognize that it might be related to substance use, being able to have, like, smart, effective, connected things to say about that. Because most parents, like, see substance use in their kids, and they do one of two things. They hope they just grow out of it, hope the problem goes away.
Yep.
And by the time, by the time they really get upset about it, their kid's been doing it, and the patterns are kind of already laid down. So if parents felt more equipped skill-wise to deal with the problem early on, and one of the things that we say all the time about substance use, especially with kids, is people don't use drugs and alcohol because they're crazy. They use drugs and alcohol because they work. Harris was talking about the self-medication theory. If somebody's struggling with anxiety and they discover that a drink or a benzodiazepine actually makes that anxiety really go away, or somebody's having difficulty sleeping, or somebody doesn't know how to talk to people, or the ADHD, so many of the ADHD kids that we work with, they describe they're just thinking all the time, right? Their brains are literally busy. And pot has this kind of paradoxical effect for a lot of them where it just helps them relax, helps them really calm down. They feel like it helps them focus. We know it doesn't actually work that way, and it demotivates them and causes all sorts of other problems, but
right. That's
the way it feels.
Yep.
So as a parent, if you can really step back and think, what is my kid getting from their substance use? Not just being a bad kid. He's getting something from it that's reinforcing. And what can I do as a parent that would really reinforce other things or develop that skill, help my child develop that skill in a different way? And I think CRAFT does a really good job of helping parents kind of see it as a behavioral thing that they can really, as a parent, have a lot of impact on. And again, I think that's really what parents want to do. They just don't have the knowledge or skill set to do it.
Absolutely. The as you were speaking, I was thinking about that sense that a teenager or a young adult has when they come in and they're telling me clinically that they believe that marijuana makes them more creative and a better writer. And then I actually once had a child share an essay with me. I was curious how much more creative their writing was. And as they began to share the essay with me, the essay made no sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
But in that state, they completely believed that was better writing than they'd ever done before.
Right. Yep. Yeah, no, it's really powerful. And that's why, and parents being confident, Harris was talking about just ways to talk to your kid about their substance use and kind of all this ambivalence of like, I smoked pot when I was their age, so maybe it's not such a bad thing now. pot's very different now. It is stronger. There's different strains. And like you guys were talking about, we know the frontal lobes are affected. So when we're talking with parents with adolescents, I'm like, I know it's really hard and really uncomfortable, but if you can just say to your kid, I don't want you putting any chemicals in your brain until as far down the road as we can possibly get you. And I want to help you learn skills in your life, because if you start, one of the problems with these kids who are using substances on a regular basis through adolescence is they're not learning other skills, you know, that other kids who are not using substances are. They're not learning how to relax without drugs and alcohol. They're not learning how to have fun and socialize without drugs and alcohol. So there's all this learning that's happening, that if a kid's smoking pot through that or drinking through that, they're not learning the skill, and then all of a sudden they're an adult and they don't have those skills. So they just become over time more and more reliant on the drugs and alcohol to achieve just the things that we all need to navigate in life.
Right, right.
You know, so if a parent can intervene early and really say, hey, I want to help you learn to do this in a different way, and I'm going to help you do that, you can have a real positive impact on your child.
Sure. And then, you know, what I'm looking at middle school children, where that's where a lot of those skills are developing. And,
yeah.
And you know, now what we're seeing is 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, children have electronic devices. They have their own iPhones. And so those skills are, again, not developing, because rather than go out and play, you know, in the street or go play in the backyard or, you know, go sledding, they're getting on group chats. Even if they're going over to each other's house, you walk into the room and they're all on their phones each other or texting the girls at the other house, you know.
Yeah.
So it's...
And they're starting to get... They're starting to do studies on... I mean, I think this whole thing with the electronic devices in the next... That'll be the next decade's job to figure out in terms of just the impact it's having on brain development. But, you know, it's incredibly reinforcing, and it is affecting the same pathways. Researchers are thinking that it affects the same pathways that a lot of drugs and alcohol do in terms of just immediate reward.
Yes.
Like you want to connect with your friend, it happens instantly. You know, you want to be excited or read something new and exciting, you can get it instantly. And just having that, like, I can change how I feel instantly versus what Harris was talking about in terms of like mindfulness, slowing things down, being able to regulate yourself without these drugs and alcohol and electronic devices, that's a real skill. So if you're not helping your child learn those skills, it's going to just get harder as time goes on.
Right. Without that immediate gratification is really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was working with a child who is diagnosed with executive functioning delays and with in several areas. And one of the things that came up for him recently was that he was texting into a group chat during spring or winter break here. And during that break, the friends were too busy. They were on vacation. They were swimming. They were, you know, on the water slide, skiing, what have you. And he wasn't getting that immediate gratification. Mm-hmm. So he kept pursuing it and pursuing it and pursuing it to the point where it actually caused a social issue, and he lost 2 friends over it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very significant. He didn't have the ability to step back and say, oh, you know what? Someone doesn't need to respond to my funny joke in my group chat within 2 seconds.
Right. And I don't know what to do with myself now, right? I don't know how to turn and change my focus to something else that is rewarding to me, or I don't know how to just be quiet for a second or whatever it is. Like, this is all skills development. And I think the more we can just help parents think of all of this as a behavioral, it's all learned. Substance use is a learned behavior. Yes, some people are genetically loaded to have that learning process happen very quickly, you know, because substances are reinforcing in a different way due to their genetics. But you learn over time. And so if you're going to ask your child to give up drugs and alcohol, you have to help them learn other things. And parents feeling like, I can have an active engagement in that process. I can support healthy behaviors and healthy choices. And realizing that your kid has no idea how to find sober friends or to come up with sober activities. They don't know how to do that. And when there's a party happening, that's very easy, right?
Yeah. Dr. Wilkins, it makes me think of at the Stanwich School here in Greenwich, we have a program that comes in and talks to our kids and parents about drug use and abuse. It's called Families Against Chemical Dependency. And one of the things that they share is that the longer an adolescent can wait or a child can wait to to experiment, that the less likely they are to have a problem down the road. I'm wondering if you also have seen, do you also know about that research, and is that also true for kids who have these vulnerabilities like ADHD or anxiety?
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's what I was saying before in terms of, like, just keep chemicals out of your brain for as long as possible, because your brain, all that wiring is coming together, right? Yeah. You don't want to have chemicals in there. You're also learning tons of things that if you're using drugs and alcohol, you're not going to learn. So the further you can push out substance use, the better. So, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Terrific. Thank you so much. What we're going to do is take a break. And when we come back, we will be talking a little more about what advice we have for parents. We'll also open up the lines for call-in. And the number is 203-661-5051. This is Beth O'Malley for Lisa Wexler on The Lisa Wexler Show.
Traffic north on the turnpike. Our travel time for the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk is 49 minutes. Northbound Merritt, there's an accident right at exit 31. Some heavy traffic behind it. Think lead poisoning is just a problem of the past? Think again. One in four kids lives in a home with potential lead paint hazards. Learn more. Be safe. LeadSafeAmerica.org. I'm Jay Trelease, 1490 WGCH Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clear early tonight, followed by increasing cloudiness towards daybreak, lows 18 to 24. For tomorrow, cloudy with snow developing by midday, highs 35 to 40. Then periods of snow tomorrow night, lows in the upper 20s. For Sunday, snow ending as snow showers, total snowfall 3 to 5 inches, high temperatures 35 to 40. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher, and that's your Weather Center forecast. From 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
This is Carl White from Greenwich Library. The Friends of Koskob Library host a return visit by popular genealogist Tony Loriano, who will speak about historical passenger manifest lists and the role they played in genealogical research. The list provides clues as to a person's nationality, birth date, date of travel, ports of departure and arrival, as well as names of vessels. Mr. Loriano has been lecturing on genealogy since 2007 after retiring as Director of Finance for the Catholic Medical Centers of Brooklyn and Queens. He is a graduate of the University of Florida and St. Francis College in New York. The program will be held on Saturday, March 25th at 10:30 a.m. at Koskob Library. Everyone is welcome. Refreshments will be available. Greenwich Library wants to be your community center. Come join us. This is Carl White on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Hi, this is Sid Mark with more of the March Sounds of Frank Sinatra. And the legend continues from the classic Nice and Easy from March of 1960 with Nelson to South Pacific March of 1951. And a great reprise single session from March of 1975. And let us remember, in hour number two, a tribute to Frank Sinatra Jr. This week's Sounds of Sinatra, my name is Sid Mark, and you're invited.
This Sunday evening from 5 till 7 on 1490 WGCH. Welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. The call-in number is 203-661-5051.
You are listening to the Lisa Wexler Show today. This is Beth O'Malley, your guest host this Friday, March 17th. I am here with Rebecca Camizio of Stanwich School, school psychologist, as well as Dr. Carrie Wilkins, who is the co-founder and clinical director of the Center for Motivation and Change, both in New York City and the Berkshires, and also the co-author of Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change, and the 20-Minute Guide, a guide for parents about how to help their child change their substance use. What I wanted to do before we talk a bit about moving, how we can help our children as they transition off to college, is to just mention that there is on my website, you'll find at O'MalleyWellness.com, and on my Facebook page, Be Well With Beth, you can click on the link for last Monday's show. And it was with Ryan Suave of Next Chapter. And that's a program down in Delray, Florida, and they are really doing very similar, really evidence-based treatment that comes out of the work that's been done prior. It's a newer facility, but along with the Karen Foundation and Center for Motivation and Change, that's another program that I really reach out to for support in working with families locally. And I interviewed Ryan Suave on disorders as related to men, substance abuse, and trauma. And so if you're looking for more information for our listeners on trauma and the use of substances to medicate untreated complex trauma, that's a nice link to look for in terms of information. And then this coming Monday, of course, we have the Harris Project, Stephanie Marcusano, and she'll be on Be Well with Beth at 2 to 3 o'clock on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour here at WGCH. And one last announcement before we go back to our clinical discussion, which is that this Sunday, our very own Rob Adams will be hosting a show live from Greenwich Avenue for the St. Patrick's Day Parade. So we're really excited about that. And he will be representing both WGCH and the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour. And he'll be down there for the whole show. I will be stopping by to chat with him, especially since listening to his show about an hour and a half ago, where as I'm listening driving here to the show, Craig Jones, I believe, and Rob discussed the who was going to be here, still alive and still functioning and still healthy. I'm not sure if they said next Monday or a year from now, but anyway, apparently I'm still going to be here. So this is very good news.
Very good news.
Rebecca and I, we come into the studio and they were still discussing it, that we're still going to be alive. So that's good news.
You passed the test.
Yeah. Well, they weren't sure what test that was, but I passed. Yay. All right. So as we look at children going off to college and really wanting to provide our listeners as parents to supporting young adults launching and going to the next phase of life, but still only being 19 or 20 years old and their brains are not fully developed, their frontal lobes are still growing and still have 5 to 10 years to go. what advice can I ask from both of you, Rebecca and Carrie?
That's a great question, and I'm not sure if I have better. I think I would defer to Dr. Wilkins on this. However, the one thing I can say, having a sophomore in college currently and a senior in high school that will be going to college, is, as we've been discussing, the communication leading up to that transition is so important for my it's been important for my kids that they understand their family history, as we discussed, that they understand the risks of experimenting with drugs and alcohol. I have learned from my daughter that it is a culture in college where drinking is very prevalent and very common. So talking about what can you do and things like that, that's been helpful to us. Dr. Wilkins, what would you suggest?
All of that, and I think parents really letting your off to college child know what your expectations are in terms of keeping themselves safe. We practice a lot around drink refusal skills. You'd be surprised, like, just the benefit of having your kid practice saying no in a way that rolls off their tongue. Mm-hmm. You know, because kids don't, they get jammed up. They think,
exactly,
oh,
right.
You know, so to actually really help them learn that as a skill, and just keeping track of things, you know, like really keeping track of grades, money, you know, kids can't get drugs and alcohol without spending money. So just being mindful of money going out, noticing any shifts of, like, if you've had a kid who's been really connected with you and then suddenly doesn't return your calls or is really kind of snarky and upset all the time. You know, I mean, some of that may just be transition to college. Some of that may be substance use.
Exactly.
And not being afraid to ask, to just say, hey, are you having a hard time? Would you tell me if you were? Just letting them know that you can talk about it is also super important.
All right. Carrie, I can't thank you enough for joining us today.
That was really fun. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm aware of the time and we need to wrap up, but I think that we can very much want to direct people to your book, The 20-Minute Guide, A Guide for Parents on How to Help Their Children Change Their Substance Use.
And so, our website has a blog with lots of information for parents, just at motivationandchange.com. There's lots of articles there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Bye.
This is Beth O'Malley here as the guest host for Lisa Wexler on The Lisa Wexler Show. Friday. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
The Voice of Greenwich. This is 1490 WGCH Greenwich.